Chapter 73. Mr. Percy Noakes was a law student, inhabiting a set of chambers on the fourth floor, in one of those houses in Gray's Inn Square which command an extensive view of the gardens, and their usual adjuncts flaunting nursery maids, and town-made children, with parenthetical legs. Mr. Percy Noakes was what is generally termed a devilish good fellow. Apostrophe he had a large circle of acquaintance, and seldom dined at his own expense. He used to talk politics to papas, flatter the vanity of mamas, do the amiable to their daughters, make pleasure engagements with their sons, and romp with the younger branches. Like those paragons of perfection, advertising footmen out of place, he was always willing to make himself generally useful. Apostrophe if any old lady, whose son was in India, gave a ball, Mr. Percy Noakes was master of the ceremonies. If any young lady made a stolen match, Mr. Percy Noakes gave her away. If a juvenile wife presented her husband with a blooming cherub, Mr. Percy Noakes was either godfather or deputy godfather. And if any member of a friend's family died, Mr. Percy Noakes was invariably to be seen in the second morning coach, with a white handkerchief to his eyes, sobbing to use his own appropriate and expressive description like winking. Apostrophe apostrophe, it may readily be imagined that these numerous avocations were rather calculated to interfere with Mr. Percy Noakes' professional studies. Mr. Percy Noakes was perfectly aware of the fact, and had, therefore, after mature reflection, made up his mind not to study at all, a laudable determination, to which he adhered in the most praiseworthy manner. His sitting room presented a strange chaos of dress gloves, boxing gloves, caricatures, albums, invitation cards, foils, cricket bats, cardboard drawings, paste, gum, and 50 other miscellaneous articles, heaped together in the strangest confusion. He was always making something for somebody, or planning some party of pleasure, which was his great forte. He invariably spoke with astonishing rapidity, was smart, spoffish, and 28. Splendid idea, 'pon my life. Apostrophe apostrophe soliloquized Mr. Percy Noakes, over his morning coffee, as his mind reverted to a suggestion which had been thrown out on the previous night, by a lady at whose house he had spent the evening. Glorious idea. Mrs. Stubbs. Apostrophe, yes, sir, apostrophe replied a dirty old woman with an inflamed countenance, emerging from the bedroom, with a barrel of dirt and cinders. This was the laundress. Did you call, sir? Apostrophe, oh. Mrs. Stubbs, I'm going out. If that tailor should call again, you'd better say I'm out of town, and shan't be back for a fortnight. And if that bootmaker should come, tell him I've lost his address, or I'd have sent him that little amount. Mind he writes it down. And if Mr. Hardy should call, you know Mr. Hardy? Apostrophe apostrophe, the funny gentleman, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe, ah, the funny gentleman. If Mr. Hardy should call, say I've gone to Mrs. Taunton's about that water party. Apostrophe, yes, sir. Apostrophe, and if any fellow calls, and says he's come about a steamer, tell him to be here at 5 o'clock this afternoon, Mrs. Stubbs. Apostrophe, very well, sir. Apostrophe, Mr. Percy Noakes brushed his hat, whisked the crumbs off his inexpressibles with a silk handkerchief, gave the ends of his hair a persuasive roll round his forefinger, and sallied forth for Mrs. Taunton's domicile in Great Marlborough Street, where she and her daughters occupied the upper part of a house. She was a good-looking widow of 50, with the form of a giantess, and the mind of a child. The pursuit of pleasure, and some means of killing time, were the sole end of her existence. She doted on her daughters, who were as frivolous as herself. A general exclamation of satisfaction hailed the arrival of Mr. Percy Noakes, who went through the ordinary salutations, and threw himself into an easy chair near the ladies' work table, with the ease of a regularly established friend of the family. Mrs. Taunton was busily engaged in planting immense bright boughs on every part of a smart cap on which it was possible to stick one. Miss Emily Taunton was making a watch guard. Miss Sophia was at the piano, practicing a new song poetry by the young officer, or the police officer, or the custom house officer, or some other interesting amateur. You good creature! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Taunton, addressing the gallant Percy. You really are a good soul. You've come about the water party, I know. Apostrophe, I should rather suspect I had, apostrophe, replied Mr. Noakes, triumphantly. Now, come here, girls, and I'll tell you all about it. Apostrophe, Miss Emily and Miss Sophia advanced to the table. Now, apostrophe, continued Mr. Percy Noakes, it seems to me that the best way will be to have a committee of 10 to make all the arrangements and manage the whole set out. Then, I propose that the expenses shall be paid by these 10 fellows jointly. Apostrophe, excellent, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Taunton, who highly approved of this part of the arrangements. Then, my plan is, that each of these 10 fellows shall have the power of asking 5 people. There must be a meeting of the committee, at my chambers, to make all the arrangements, and these people shall be then named. Every member of the committee shall have the power of blackballing anyone who is proposed, and one blackball shall exclude that person. This will ensure our having a pleasant party, you know. Apostrophe, what a manager you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, interrupted Mrs. Taunton again. Charming. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the lovely Emily. I never did. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ejaculated Sophia. Yes, I think it'll do, apostrophe, replied Mr. Percy Noakes, who was now quite in his element. I think it'll do. Then you know we shall go down to the Nore, and back, and have a regular capital cold dinner laid out in the cabin before we start, so that everything may be ready without any confusion. And we shall have the lunch laid out, on deck, in those little tea garden looking concerns by the paddle boxes, I don't know what you call them. Then, we shall hire a steamer expressly for our party, and a band, and have the deck chalked, and we shall be able to dance quadrilles all day. And then, whoever we know that's musical, you know, why they'll make themselves useful and agreeable. And upon the whole, I really hope we shall have a glorious day, you know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the announcement of these arrangements was received with the utmost enthusiasm. Mrs. Taunton, Emily, and Sophia were loud in their praises. Well, but tell me, Percy, apostrophe, said Mrs. Taunton, who are the 10 gentlemen to be? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh. I know plenty of fellows who'll be delighted with the scheme, apostrophe, replied Mr. Percy Noakes. Of course we shall have apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Hardy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, interrupted the servant, announcing a visitor. Miss Sophia and Miss Emily hastily assumed the most interesting attitudes that could be adopted on so short a notice. How are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said a stout gentleman of about 40, pausing at the door in the attitude of an awkward harlequin. This was Mr. Hardy, whom we have before described, on the authority of Mrs. Stubbs, as the funny gentleman. Apostrophe, he was an astley cooperish Joe Miller, a practical joker, immensely popular with married ladies, and a general favorite with young men. He was always engaged in some pleasure excursion or other, and delighted in getting somebody into a scrape on such occasions. He could sing comic songs, imitate hackney coachmen and fowls, play airs on his chin, and execute concertos on the Jew's harp. He always eat and drank most immoderately, and was the bosom friend of Mr. Percy Noakes. He had a red face, a somewhat husky voice, and a tremendous laugh. How are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said this worthy, laughing, as if it were the finest joke in the world, to make a morning call, and shaking hands with the ladies with as much vehemence, as if their arms had been so many pump handles. You're just the very man I wanted, apostrophe, said Mr. Percy Noakes, who proceeded to explain the cause of his being in requisition. Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe shouted Artie, after hearing the statement, and receiving a detailed account of the proposed excursion. Oh, capital, glorious. What a day it will be. What fun. But, I say, when are you going to begin making the arrangements? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no time like the present at once, if you please. Apostrophe, oh, charming. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the ladies. Pray, do. Apostrophe, writing materials were laid before Mr. Percy Noakes, and the names of the different members of the committee were agreed on, after as much discussion between them and Mr. Hardy, as if the fate of nations had depended on their appointment. It was then agreed that a meeting should take place at Mr. Percy Noakes' chambers on the ensuing Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock, and the visitors departed. Wednesday evening arrived. 8 o'clock came, and 8 members of the committee were punctual in their attendance. Mr. Loggins, the solicitor, of Boswell Court, sent an excuse, and Mr. Samuel Briggs, the ditto of Furnival's Inn, sent his brother. Much to the brother's satisfaction, and greatly to the discomfiture of Mr. Percy Noakes. Between the Briggses and the Tauntons there existed a degree of implacable hatred, quite unprecedented. The animosity between the Montagues and Capulets was nothing to that which prevailed between these two illustrious houses. Mrs. Briggs was a widow, with 3 daughters and 2 sons. Mr. Samuel, the eldest, was an attorney, and Mr. Alexander, the youngest, was under articles to his brother. They resided in Portland Street, Oxford Street, and moved in the same orbit as the Tauntons, hence their mutual dislike. If the Miss Briggses appeared in smart bonnets, the Miss Tauntons eclipsed them with smarter. If Mrs. Taunton appeared in a cap of all the hues of the rainbow, Mrs. Briggs forthwith mounted a toque with all the patterns of the kaleidoscope. If Miss Sophia Taunton learned a new song, 2 of the Miss Briggses came out with a new duet. The Tauntons had once gained a temporary triumph with the assistance of a harp, but the Briggses brought 3 guitars into the field and effectually routed the enemy. There was no end to the rivalry between them. Now, as Mr. Samuel Briggs was a mere machine, a sort of self-acting legal walking stick, and as the party was known to have originated, however remotely, with Mrs. Taunton, the female branches of the Briggs family had arranged that Mr. Alexander should attend, instead of his brother, and as the said Mr. Alexander was deservedly celebrated for possessing all the pertinacity of a bankruptcy court attorney, combined with the obstinacy of that useful animal which browses on the thistle, he required but little tuition. He was especially enjoined to make himself as disagreeable as possible, and, above all, to blackball the Tauntons at every hazard. The proceedings of the evening were opened by Mr. Percy Noakes. After successfully urging on the gentlemen present the propriety of their mixing some brandy and water, he briefly stated the object of the meeting, and concluded by observing that the first step must be the selection of a chairman, necessarily possessing some arbitrary he trusted not unconstitutional powers, to whom the personal direction of the whole of the arrangements subject to the approval of the committee should be confided. A pale young gentleman, in a green stock and spectacles of the same, a member of the Honorable Society of the Inner Temple, immediately rose for the purpose of proposing Mr. Percy Noakes. He had known him long, and this he would say, that a more honorable, a more excellent, or a better-hearted fellow, never existed. Hear, hear. The young gentleman, who was a member of a debating society, took this opportunity of entering into an examination of the state of the English law, from the days of William the Conqueror down to the present period. He briefly adverted to the code established by the ancient Druids, slightly glanced at the principles laid down by the Athenian lawgivers, and concluded with a most glowing eulogium on picnics and constitutional rights. Mr. Alexander Briggs opposed the motion. He had the highest esteem for Mr. Percy Noakes as an individual, but he did consider that he ought not to be entrusted with these immense powers. He believed that in the proposed capacity Mr. Percy Noakes would not act fairly, impartially, or honorably, but he begged it to be distinctly understood that he said this without the slightest personal disrespect. Mr. Hardy defended his honorable friend, in a voice rendered partially unintelligible by emotion and brandy and water. The proposition was put to the vote, and there appearing to be only one dissentient voice, Mr. Percy Noakes was declared duly elected, and took the chair accordingly. The business of the meeting now proceeded with rapidity. The chairman delivered in his estimate of the probable expense of the excursion, and everyone present subscribed his portion thereof. The question was put that the Endeavour be hired for the occasion. Mr. Alexander Briggs moved as an amendment that the word fly be substituted for the word Endeavour, but after some debate consented to withdraw his opposition. The important ceremony of balloting then commenced. A tea caddy was placed on the table in a dark corner of the apartment, and everyone was provided with two backgammon men, one black and one white. The chairman with great solemnity then read the following list of the guests whom he proposed to introduce. Mrs. Taunton and two daughters, Mr. Whizzle, Mr. Simpson. The names were respectively balloted for, and Mrs. Taunton and her daughters were declared to be blackballed. Mr. Percy Noakes and Mr. Hardy exchanged glances. Is your list prepared, Mr. Briggs? Inquired the chairman. It is, replied Alexander, delivering in the following. Mrs. Briggs and three daughters, Mr. Samuel Briggs. The previous ceremony was repeated, and Mrs. Briggs and three daughters were declared to be blackballed. Mr. Alexander Briggs looked rather foolish, and the remainder of the company appeared somewhat overawed by the mysterious nature of the proceedings. The balloting proceeded. But, one little circumstance which Mr. Percy Noakes had not originally foreseen, prevented the system from working quite as well as he had anticipated. Everybody was blackballed. Mr. Alexander Briggs, by way of retaliation, exercised his power of exclusion in every instance, and the result was that after 3 hours had been consumed in hard balloting, the names of only three gentlemen were found to have been agreed to. In this dilemma, what was to be done? Either the whole plan must fall to the ground, or a compromise must be effected. The latter alternative was preferable, and Mr. Percy Noakes therefore proposed that the form of balloting should be dispensed with, and that every gentleman should merely be required to state whom he intended to bring. The proposal was acceded to, the Tauntons and the Briggses were reinstated, and the party was formed. The next Wednesday was fixed for the eventful day, and it was unanimously resolved that every member of the committee should wear a piece of blue sarsenet ribbon round his left arm. It appeared from the statement of Mr. Percy Noakes that the boat belonged to the General Steam Navigation Company and was then lying off the Custom House, and, as he proposed, that the dinner and wines should be provided by an eminent city purveyor, it was arranged that Mr. Percy Noakes should be on board by 7 o'clock to superintend the arrangements, and that the remaining members of the committee, together with the company generally, should be expected to join her. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.